This episode contains frank and open discussion of sexual harassment, abuse, and assault. Varsha and I recorded this episode last week, right after we had both watched the Kavanaugh hearings. There was a technical problem and we didn't end up posting it last week, but we thought that it was a really important episode to share, so we've decided to share it today and then resume with guests next week. So sorry for the mix-up, and thank you for understanding. So in the week since then, we had Jeff Flake demand an FBI investigation and then close that puny-ass FBI investigation. And now it looks like we're scheduled for a floor vote as early as tomorrow. So we don't know what's going to happen, but we do know that this is all bullshit. So keep the faith, Hellions, and keep resisting no matter what. Did you end up watching the Kavanaugh hearing today, Varsha?
I did. I was in class during most of it, but I ended up rewatching most of it after I came home from class and before we're recording right now, because you can't not watch something that's going to be, no matter what happens, how senators vote on his confirmation. This was a really important day in U.S. history. And I don't like to make those statements like lightly, because, you know, there's different ways you can interpret history, but like there are definite like turning points in history, and this is like a really important turning point, right? And you can look at this alongside Anita Hill's hearings, you know, decades ago, and talk about how much you've changed if you were trying to analyze how sexual harassment has been discussed for the past couple decades.
Right. Yeah, I ended up watching most of it live. It started at 7 a.m. Pacific time, so I missed the first couple of hours, but I went back and rewatched it. But I watched most of it live, which was quite the experience. I'm not going to lie. I had a glass of wine before we started recording, because this has been a very intense emotional day.
Yeah.
And I watched part of it with my husband, and I live tweeted a lot of it, which I've never done, so I don't know if that was any good, but I just had so many emotions and so many reactions to it. And it was definitely, I think this is it's a historical moment, right? You know, like you said, you don't say that lightly. We don't say that lightly, but I think it's quite obvious that this is a turning point in not only how we view the judicial system and the Supreme Court. I mean, regardless of anything else that happens, even if Kavanaugh is not, put through as a Supreme Court nominee, he still sits on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in D.C., which is a very prestigious, judgeship. So the fact of the matter is we saw behind the curtain a little bit today, and it's a really important moment. Like I said, not only because of that, but also because I think it really says so much about where we are in terms of how we talk about sexual abuse and women's bodies. And I think that is going to be really important as we move forward from this, however we move forward.
Yeah, I agree. It was just really eye-opening to think about how, when I was reading through Twitter, because I couldn't watch the testimony live, I was watching it later, but when I was reading through Twitter as it was happening, it was fascinating to see how different types of, like, I guess you can call them pundits, were reacting to Ford's testimony and Kavanaugh's testimony. And there were people who were just so focused on like the political like implications of Ford's testimony and how it makes the 11 men on the GOP Judiciary Committee look like assholes. And I was like, yeah, there's political implications to this. I understand. But there's also just like profound societal implications that we think what's happening right now is something that like should be happening. You know, that there isn't more empathy, that there's something, you know, the senators are so, like, the GOP senators are so aware that the optics of having, like, white men yell at a woman is probably not good, that they hire a prosecutor, but they can't, like, for God's sake, just appoint some female GOP senators to the Judiciary Committee was mind-boggling, right? And at the same time, the way that they were allowing Mitchell to question Ford was just, it was frankly like disgusting. And I think what was really even more disgusting was when you get to Kavanaugh's testimony, the GOP senators actually cut off Mitchell when she started getting her flow, because she was asking pretty probative questions about like whether or not this was like a real thing, right? And I think that was just really telling, the fact that Senator Graham gives this really fucked up speech in the end about like how, oh, this is the most like messed up thing the Senate has ever done. I forget, like, I need to like say what he said. Oh yeah, he said, "To my Republican colleagues, if you vote no, you're legitimizing the most despicable thing I've ever seen in my time at politics." And I was like, Merrick fucking Garland. Right. Merrick fucking Garland, man.
Merrick Garland called and he said, "Go fuck yourself."
Literally. Actually, he probably didn't. I bet like, you know, Judge Kavanaugh goes to his job tomorrow, his current judgeship, and you know, Merrick Garland is like, "Yeah, you know, this is how I feel, except I didn't actually try to rape anybody."
Okay, Varsha, so I want to back up for a second, and I want to talk about how this structurally went. So after a lot of brouhaha and contention around how this hearing, or if this hearing, would go forward, the committee decided that they would hear Dr. Ford and Kavanaugh only. They would not speak to any other witnesses. They would not reopen the FBI background investigation. She was invited to speak. And I say invited, but it really wasn't an invitation. She was given a deadline that was basically take this or leave this. We're not going to, you know, work with you at all. If you want to tell your story, tell it. If you don't, then we're going to vote on Kavanaugh. So this was not a friendly endeavor. This was not something where they were trying to get to the bottom of this. This was, they knew that they couldn't ignore her. And so they made it as difficult as humanly possible for her to tell her story. So what it opened with Dr. Christine Blasey Ford giving an opening statement that frankly made me break down in tears. And she spoke about the incident and how she felt and how it's affected her life and why she decided to come forward. Because I know I'm preaching to the choir a little bit here, but I think it's so important to remember that she sent a letter to her congressional representative, mm-hmm. who then passed on to Dianne Feinstein before Kavanaugh was a nominee. It's when he was put on the short list.
Exactly.
And she believed that it was her civic duty to give this information to the people who made this decision so that they could make a more informed decision. This was not politically motivated. She did not show up at the 11th hour, which was a favorite talking point of Republicans earlier today.
Another way you know it is the way that she was talking about the reason for testifying. She literally keeps saying throughout the whole thing, throughout the testimony, which is really heartbreaking, "I just want to be of help." She is not saying that, you know, this means that Kavanaugh should go to jail. She's not saying that the GOP senators are evil or whatever. She's literally saying, my goal was to literally be like my goal was to help you vet. That was my goal.
Right.
She literally says at the beginning, I was hoping that they would choose another qualified conservative nominee. That was what she wanted to happen. She didn't want him to be nominated. She doesn't want him to be confirmed. She didn't want him to be nominated because of what happened to her. But she came forward with the story before he was nominated. And also, she literally told the story to her therapist, her couple's therapist, in 2012 before Kavanaugh was on the national scene. Like, yes, he was a judge, but no one was talking about Kavanaugh being in the Supreme Court in 2012.
Right. Well, and I think it's also important to point out that in her opening statement, she said something so powerful. She said, "I am nobody's political pawn."
Yes.
"I am not here with some larger conspiracy that you think we are conducting." She's like, "I am doing this out of a sense of civic responsibility." She has put her life and her body in between the American public and Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court, not because it's been fun for her. She's gotten death threats. She's had reporters swarm her house and her place of business. She's had to move twice. And there is just absolutely no empathy for not even what happened when she was assaulted, but what's happening to her now. And they're trying to say, oh, she's just doing this for some reason to hurt Kavanaugh. But it's like most people, even the most diabolical people, will not hurt other people at that steep a detriment to themselves. Mm-hmm. She is going through hell right now. And I use hell a little wobbly because that was a very overused metaphor today, to say the very least. But she has put herself up for public inspection. So she gave her testimony. And like you said, Varsha, the Republican members of the committee hired and ceded their time, 5 minutes at a time. It was a very odd thing, to a female sex crimes prosecutor from Arizona named Rachel Mitchell. And she is an experienced prosecutor, and she was hired to ask questions of Dr. Ford. But they still kept with the regular hearing rules. So it was 5 minutes to a Republican senator, 5 minutes to a Democratic senator. And so all the Republicans did was cede their time. So it was 5 minutes of Mitchell asking questions, and then it was 5 minutes of a Democratic senator and back to Mitchell. It was very awkward and very odd. And it was also like so transparently, it was such a transparent ploy because they knew the all male, all white Republican senators, the world's, I believe it was Trevor Noah who put it, the world's most wrinkly boy band, knew that they could not survive the optics of 11 old white dudes grilling a sexual assault survivor. And so they farmed it out. It was such a self-own because she did not make them look better. She couldn't get into a flow. This is not how she's used to conducting interviews. You know, she's not used to doing it in 5 minute chunks. And she, it was very uneven. And on top of everything else, it made them all look like dicks. It was obvious what they were doing from the beginning.
Also, even the questions she was asking were very, very weird. It was very much like Mitchell cared more about the process by which Ford took to report this than by the actual attempted rape itself. Literally, she focused on like how much she flied and whether she was afraid of flying, then why is she here? And like who paid for her $200 polygraph test? And it was like, what is even the point here? And I think what was really like heartbreaking throughout all of this is that there are times where, you know, Ford didn't understand the question and you could just like tell that like, you know, the whole everyone watching is just on pins and needles because they're just like, and it was very easy to empathize with Ford. And I think that was what made her testimony really strong is that I don't say this lightly, but I bet the way that she prepped for this was just to be like, how can I be most myself? And also just not break down, because I could tell that she just, all she wanted to do was like cry and not be there. And I think that's the most important thing about the testimony is that she makes clear at the beginning that she's literally terrified of being here, right? She's literally terrified of being here because she doesn't, she never thought this would have to happen. She never thought she would have to, you know, if she hadn't remodeled her house, she never would have told her couple, her therapist and her husband about the sexual assault. If Brett Kavanaugh wasn't on the shortlist, she never would have had to send that letter. She doesn't want to do this. And I think that was like a weird theme that was placed on top of the hearing is that this was another way that, you know, her history, her story, her life was being violated because she had to go through this again. And I think the real problem I had with Mitchell's questioning was that she was basically like ruining the retelling of the story. She wasn't even allowing Ford to retell the story. And by extension, the Republicans weren't allowing Ford to tell the story that she wanted to tell. But at the same time, I would say like, with the exception of some Democrats who were just doing a lot of speech making, some Democrats had really, really good questions that got to the heart of Ford's story and her experience that I thought were really useful or just really important for the country to hear. And I think the most important one was Leahy's question about what her most vivid memory was. Leahy asks, what is the strongest memory you have, the strongest memory of the incident, something that you cannot forget? Take whatever time you need. And Ford says, indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter, the laugh, the uproarious laughter between the two, and they're having fun at my expense. And it was just so powerful to hear her say that. And then people, women who were watching like across the country could probably point to one other thing that they would remember of their own experiences, obviously, right? And I think that was what was so, so sad about this hearing. It just felt like you were reliving your own experiences through Ford's experiences.
I think it's really important to talk about Ford's testimony and what it did and why we needed to hear it. But what I really want to focus on is actually Kavanaugh's testimony. And I'm not saying that because I think that Dr. Ford's testimony is unimportant or somehow unreliable. I think that it is that her speaking out in and of itself was such a brave and ultimately patriotic act. And I know that sounds a little odd, but she was doing this because she wanted to make sure that this country did not suffer as she did at the hands of this man. So Kavanaugh started with his opening statement, and he fucking lost it. I'm not sure he ever had it, to be perfectly honest, but anything that he might have had, he fucking lost. He was screaming at this room. I mean, I said on Twitter, like, cartoon spittle was flying out of his mouth. He was red. He was pissed. And he was just, I mean, and for me, that told me everything I needed to know about Kavanaugh that I might not have known up to that point. Because here's the thing. A lot of this testimony, you know, focused on him drinking and blacking out and, you know, what you did when you were a teenager, because they didn't even really talk much about the other allegations, which we will get to in a second. But just watching him lose it like that just showed me so clearly that Kavanaugh is an abusive drunk. I have history of alcoholism in my family. And one of my very close family members is in AA and has been in recovery since long before I've known him. And he always refers to something called a dry drunk. So if you're an alcoholic, and even if you're not drunk, you can still go into these sort of quasi-drunken rages. And you act like the petulant, mean person that you turn into when you are drinking. And even if you've been in recovery for years and years and years, you can still have dry drunk spells where you get into that mindset and you act like that asshole person that you're trying to get away from, even if you're stone cold sober. And so to me, that was just a clear dry drunk. He was raging. He could not contain himself. And if you think about that, and you add any amount of alcohol to that, can you imagine what he is like? There is no doubt in my mind that he could absolutely commit these crimes that he is accused of just from his opening statement with no other information, just watching that man like feel entitled and holier than thou and mean. And for me, I just, that's the moment for me listening to that when I realized this guy is a abusive, drunken man who treats women like shit and thinks he can get away with it. And that's not subtext. That's just what he's fucking telling us.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the for me, the messed up thing about his opening statement was the fact that not only did it take like 45 fucking minutes, but it totally, like, just quick history lesson, like, the Supreme Court has always been political. There's no point in history when it's been apolitical. That is obviously, you know, everyone probably knows that already. But the fact that it took him less than like 2 fucking seconds to take off his mask of impartiality of, you know, the I respect precedent, Judge Kavanaugh, and just go into the fact that this is like a Democratic conspiracy as revenge for what he did to the Clintons. Like, I know I like Hillary Clinton, but no Democratic senator is that hell-bent on defending Bill Clinton in 2018. No one is doing that, right? And so it was just such bullshit. And he was also lying about so many different things. Like, he literally said that because Christine Ford goes to a different school, right, went to a different school, that like they didn't hang out a lot with school members from that all-girls school. That's bullshit. There were people who have gone to both those schools who are tweeting out during the hearing that, yeah, that's bullshit. they had, you know, they had parties together, both these different schools. Just because Kavanaugh went to an all-boys school didn't mean he never saw a girl for 4 fucking years. Like, what are you talking about? And that opening statement just, like, made it very clear that not only is he clearly capable of doing the things he's been accused of by multiple women, he is also clearly unfit, based on his temperament, to be an impartial justice on the Supreme Court. And I don't mean impartial in the sense that he's going to vote like Merrick Garland, like a true moderate, or, you know, like a fucking, like whatever your picture of a real impartial judge is. Like, I don't even think he could be as impartial, quote unquote, as Clarence Thomas or as John Roberts,
right?
Like, that is how, like, fucked up I think that is. Like, he was not only, like, not only did this, like, opening statement take a really long time, he also was incredibly rude to the senators, incredibly rude, and clearly more rude to the female senators on the Democratic side than to any of the other senators, right? It was like, my least favorite moment was Klobuchar spends a couple minutes talking about how her dad, you know, was an alcoholic and was going through AA. And because she's leading up to a question about asking him about, you know, whether he's blacked out, right? And so she says, you know, my own dad struggled with alcoholism for most of his life. He got in trouble for it. There were consequences. And he's still in AA, age 90. And then she goes into her question, like, you know, have you ever, you know, blacked out? And he goes, you know, she's like, is drinking is one thing, but, like, have you ever gotten so drunk that you can't remember what happened part of the night or what happened the whole night, right? And he says, no, I remember what happened. I think I probably can have some beers, but I still remember what happened. And then she's asking, you know, have you blacked out? And he's like, no, I haven't. Have you? And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
No, he. But the thing is,
he didn't even ask the question. He literally was like, have you? This is what he said. He said, you're asking about, you know, blackout. I don't know. Have you? But you have to watch it, because he leans back in his, like, chair and is like a fucking asshole about it. And then she's like, I'm curious if you have a drinking problem, right? Klobuchar was like, could you answer the question? You know, can you or can you not remember? Like, is that your answer? Have you? And Kavanaugh is like, yeah, that's my answer. I'm curious if you have. And Klobuchar is like, I have no drinking problem, Judge. And he's like, yeah, nor do I. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, are you or are you not, one, a quote-unquote respected judge on the D.C. Circuit, and two, fucking testifying in front of some, like, goddamn U.S. senators? Like, what are you doing?
Talking to a U.S. senator like that has never been done by, I don't know, anyone, especially someone who wants to be on the Supreme Court. I mean, here's the thing. So, right, he was a total asshole to Amy Klobuchar. He fucking interrupted Dianne freaking Feinstein. Like, you got to be fucking kidding me. She will eat you for lunch and come back for seconds. Like, be real careful with her.
I love that Harris was the only senator he couldn't interrupt.
Oh, yeah. Love that. She was having zero of his bullshit. So he was all of these things. And like you said, I mean, this really goes to temperament. This goes to the fact that, like, impartiality is not even on the table. It's not even in the fucking room at this point. But here's where this gets scary. Is he was speaking to United States senators that way because he knows that he can. And that because of the way our system is currently operating, he knows that he has very little to fear in this process, because he knows that he probably has all 11 votes from the old white guys on the Republican side of the Judiciary Committee. And in terms of taking it to the Senate floor, you know, there are definitely people who are on the fence and who can be peeled off. But the fact of the matter is that it's close, and he knows that he doesn't have to win everyone's approval. So he can be an asshole and no one's going to stop him. And that, I think, is the scariest part here. And this idea of entitlement, and this idea that it actually doesn't really matter if he committed these crimes or not. It doesn't matter how many women come forward to levy these accusations at him, because he knows that it doesn't matter.
Another thing I found really disgusting was how he was, like, I understand that his daughters and his wife are going through something, and I totally feel for them, because they didn't make Kavanaugh be a creep, but he was basically being like, you know, my family is going through so much like shit and all this crap. And I'm like, are you really using your children and your wife to like defend yourself as to like how horrible this has been for you? How about how horrible this has been for like Dr. Ford, right? Like, okay, like why does your wife and your child and your two daughters going through shit like have anything to say about your character? Like, what does that say about your character? Why are you bringing that up? Are you like, are you or are you not a lawyer? Do you not know how like logic works, right? And so he was using these emotional pleas in his opening statement and throughout the testimony. And the whole time I was watching it, I was like, okay, so clearly if a woman was having these allegations against her, she couldn't use these emotional pleas because he's a man. He can lose his shit and it's gravitas, right? And I was reading this really great article. It was like an explainer by Ezra Klein on the whole hearings. And he was just like, he was talking about how obviously the Republicans didn't want truth, that that wasn't their goal. Their goal was just to do something, to do something. And he cites this really fascinating term by this philosopher, feminist philosopher Kate Mann. She coins the term himpathy, and she coins it to describe the, quote, tendency to dismiss the female perspectives altogether, to empathize with the powerful man over his less powerful alleged female victim, right? And that was, that is the Republicans like caucus. That is a Republican defense. Literally what they said, like the spin after Ford's testimony was she was credible. And then the spin after Kavanaugh's testimony was, you know, she was credible, but for, but you know, Kavanaugh was also very like emotional and strong. The word they really used was strong. That's the word they used. And that is so fucked up. That is so fucked up that not only do like feminist philosophers out here have to coin a term because it's so common a practice for us to like identify with the male perpetrator of a crime over the female victim. It's so fucked up that it was obvious that it was what the GOP has been doing for the past 2 weeks. And it's obvious it's what they did today. They literally, Graham was just like losing his shit. Like, nobody better tell me if females or women are too emotionally politicians ever again, because what the fuck was like Lindsey Graham doing today? Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is they gave away the fucking game. And I think it's also so clear in the fact that, remember the sex crimes prosecutor from Arizona, Rachel Mitchell, who was brought on to question Dr. Ford, she was not used and in fact fairly just offhandedly dismissed when it came to Kavanaugh. She yeah. started the questioning and then the Republican male senators were like, no, we got this. And then just broed the fuck out with Kavanaugh and like told him how wonderful he was and how much bullshit it was that he was going through this because and here's the really important part. Here's the really important part. And this came at a moment when Mazie Hirono, national fucking treasure, Mazie Hirono, was questioning Kavanaugh. She looked him in the face and said, you are not entitled to this seat. And that's when I realized that she said that and every other Republican man in that room was telling him that he was entitled to it and that this is bullshit because he deserves this. He deserves this. And so they just gave it away. They just gave away the game that it does not matter to them what actually happened. And in fact, this whole proceeding was, you know, it kind of was a farce. You know, Kavanaugh called the Swetnick the most recent allegations
from the Twilight Zone or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And he called them a farce. No, this whole thing was a farce, but not in the way that they think it is. It was a farce because it was never meant to do anything except placate a public, while at the same time skirting the rule of law and shoving it in our faces in true authoritarian fashion. And I've been thinking a lot about this. I spoke to Sarah Kendzior recently. She was on Crush the Midterms with me. And we spoke a lot about this creep of authoritarianism and how, and we've spoken with her before on this show about how a part of that is putting on the specter of legality. And so doing things like these hearings and maybe having a trial and whatever, while all the while knowing it doesn't matter. And then forcing that sort of disregard of the law into the public's face and saying, you can't do anything about it.
I think what's really, really like frustrating about all this is that, like, for example, like Yale students have been protesting, Yale law students have been protesting Yale's complicity in basically like Kavanaugh's nomination. And Yale professors have been like, they signed a letter saying, you know, fuck this guy. And just like in a couple hours ago, America Magazine, which is a Catholic Jesuit publication, rescinded its endorsement of Kavanaugh. And just a couple hours ago, the ABA, the American Bar Association, was like, fuck this guy, halt the investigate, like halt the Kavanaugh proceedings until after the FBI completes a probe of these allegations. All like the society, like American society is going, like, wait, like, can we like push the brakes on this for a little bit and just think about this? And the GOP is like, no. We're in control. We don't care about anything. And we are literally going to push this guy through, or in Mitch McConnell's words, plow this vote through in order to like get what we want. And we are going to send the message that Kavanaugh is not only like going to get this seat, but he is entitled to this seat. And we as Republicans are not only going to vote for this guy, but we are entitled to vote for this guy, regardless of what the public thinks. So if people thought the Supreme Court and the Senate was undemocratic, unsmall d democratic before, this is going to like, this is going to grow that feeling by a lot. Because even if Kavanaugh is confirmed, there's going to be an asterisk by his name, not just because he's a fucking sexual harasser and, you know, an accused sexual abuser, but also because he has been confirmed under the most like partisan process I've ever seen. Like, this is worse than the Gorsuch hearings, because
this is worse than the Gorsuch hearings.
And that's
this
saying
is fucking
a lot
worse.
Because at the because like you could actually argue that Gorsuch is like more conservative than Kavanaugh in like certain ways, right? And so because of that, like, you know, Senator Harris put this into the record, because everyone was like, oh, this is a giant left-wing conspiracy. The timing is so off. And Harris was like, wait a second. There was this guy. His name is Neil. I don't know if you remember him, Senator Graham, but he was confirmed without any accusations against him in the same partisan climate. And he was confirmed with fucking Democratic votes. And there are Democrats out here, I'm looking at you, Heitkamp and Manchin, who are still considering voting for this asshole Kavanaugh guy. So don't tell me about some partisan like process and about how, you know, Kavanaugh is entitled to this seat. Your job is to advise and consent. And you refuse to do your job for Merrick Garland, Senator Graham, but you insist that you have to do this job within 2 days to confirm Kavanaugh. Like, that's how urgent your constitutional need is to do your job, that you, like, your constitutional like requirement to do your job is that you have to do it and you have to push this vote through. Like, how fucked up is that? That they just like gave away the game, right? And so this whole like day was just like an exercise in empathy, where people were like, you know what, like, even if Christine Blasey Ford is telling the truth, like, we talked about this argument from the National Review on Monday, even if she's telling the truth, like, does that mean Kavanaugh is no longer entitled to this job? And I was like, yeah, because it's a job interview. Like, let's just say this, like I emailed Devin last September, right, asking her if I could, you know, work as a research assistant for Hellbent. Devin says yes. And then she's like, oh, but, you know, you have to I just want to talk to you over the phone for a little bit. And then afterwards, like, after she talks to me on the phone, she, like, somebody sends her a background report or a background check, and it says that I was, like, accused of, like, theft multiple times. Devin's going to find another intern. She's going to hire another fucking intern, guys. Like, it's pretty obvious. Even though Varsha is very qualified to be a research assistant, if I've been like convicted of theft or accused of theft or whatever, right? Even if I've already served my time or whatever, the way our society works is that there can only be like forgiveness if you are like contrite about it. So if I was maybe like honest to Devin, be like, hey, I've been in some trouble in the past, and Devin was like, oh, thank you for being honest with me, like, don't worry, we'll think about this, right? That's how it works in society. It's really hard, but former like felons are able to get jobs in very rare circumstances only when they're honest, right? And the problem with the Kavanaugh hearings for me, and the problem with Judge Kavanaugh in general, is that he refuses to be honest about anything. He lied about everything. Like, not just like the fact that he didn't do this to Dr. Ford, but also that he didn't get drunk a lot in high school, or that he called the Devil's Triangle a drinking game. I wasn't born in the 80s, so like, we don't really use that term in like 2018, but even I know that the Devil's Triangle is a fucking three-way where there's two men and one woman. Even I know that. Like, right, what right. the fuck?
I know. Well, and they even asked about that. I was shocked because someone asked, one of the Democratic senators asked what a devil's triangle was, and he was like, drinking game. It's a drinking game. And I was like, holy shit. No one thinks that. Like, you cannot possibly think that people think that.
He like brought up his calendar again as if like that is like a valid way to defend himself. And then he was like, see, on the calendar, I didn't write I was going to attempt to rape someone. And I'm like, okay. But on the calendar, it also says with PJ and a guy named Judge, a.k.a. Mark Judge, you're going to have some skis, and which is a really fucked up thing to call beers. But beers to brewskis to skis. You wrote skis on your fucking calendar. I'm assuming you weren't going skiing in the middle of the summer.
The whole thing is such a practice in doublethink. I mean, I feel like we're so overusing that, but it's such, here's the thing. Here's the other thing. So I read two really excellent pieces about this, you know, preparing for this episode. One was in The Cut by Rebecca Traister, and it was talking about how the title was, quote, "What a Good Boy," because Kavanaugh played the part of this good boy. And even though he was slightly unhinged, and even though he got angry and interrupted Senator Dianne freaking Feinstein, he still played this, oh, I don't know what you're talking, devil's triangle is a drinking game, it's fine. So he played this. And she pointed out that Grassley opened up this whole hearing by comparing Dr. Ford's suffering to Brett Kavanaugh's suffering.
What the fuck?
So this false equivalency of being accused of sexual assault is just as bad as being sexually assaulted, and setting up that as the dichotomy and trying to say that these two people have suffered the same thing. So you should feel sad for both of them equally because they've suffered the same thing.
I mean, what was really telling was during the hearings, like someone was like, you know, I think it was either Democratic or Republican senator during Ford's testimony was like, you know, why do you think one of your friends who you know, like your friend says she doesn't remember this happening, right? And Ford is like, she doesn't remember it because it was a regular party for her, right? Other people might not remember it because it was a regular fucking party for it. And that's the most like fucked up thing about Grassley opening the hearing that way, because you could say the most charitable thing you can say about Kavanaugh is that he genuinely doesn't remember this happening. But Ford has had to remember this happen every day. She has had to live with this every day of her life since high school because it happened to her. And that's what's really fucked up about it is that men, like every fucking day, men can go about their fucking lives and not remember the shit because they're not the ones experiencing it, unless they are, right? So like men who haven't been abused or who haven't sexually assaulted like other women can go about their lives like not experiencing that dread that you feel by not having an extra door in your bedroom, or by not walking alone at night, or not hearing a particular song because it triggers you, right? Like, there are men out there who cannot relate. But what's really problematic about this hearing and about like the discussion that we're having right now is that there are men who just refuse to relate, right? Like fucking Lindsey Graham before the hearing was like, I don't understand why if you went like of the Swetnick allegations, he was like, I don't understand if you went to this one party, why you didn't report it, why you would continue to go to more parties and all this stuff. And I was just like, have you heard of the Catholic Church? How about Larry Nassar, Senator Graham? Like people go for decades without reporting because it's fucked up. It is hard to report. It is gut-wrenching. And not only do you have to live through your own trauma, but you have to live through the trauma that society will put on you because they will not believe you. Because people don't remember, like, at the beginning of, like, the Weinstein allegations, the beginning of this whole thing that we call the Me Too movement, there were stories of people saying, no, these allegations against Weinstein aren't true, right? Same thing with, like, Wynn. Same thing with Bill O'Reilly. There are still people out there who are just like, yeah, Bill O'Reilly is totally innocent. That's why people don't report. And I feel like there were multiple themes to this hearing. Like if you're going to analyze it for its themes, like one of the themes was that men on the Senate Judiciary Committee and men in general don't seem to understand what you have to go through to report sexual harassment, sexual abuse, rape, whatever. And they don't seem to understand what men and women go through in order to report this. And that was just so unbelievably fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, what really struck me was sort of on the breaks and reporters would swarm the mm-hmm. senators. And even before Lindsey Graham gave his whole speech about how say voting no on this says that it's okay to do this or some shit. You know, I don't even care. Like, it was so fucked up. I don't even care. But we so a reporter, you know, when he talked about the Swetnick allegations and basically said, like, why would you go back? Not just why wouldn't you report the first time? Why would you go back? And it was that moment that I, again, like, these are things that you know and they kind of live at the back of your head but get brought up to the surface. That was when I really realized or really remembered or really re-realized that privileged old white men do not even attempt to understand the experience of people who don't look and act like them. He is uninterested and uncurious as to why that would be the case. He gets to sit there and sanctimoniously say, well, why didn't you do what I would have done? And makes no attempt to empathize or sympathize or think about the larger context in which he is saying those words. Men are allowed to say the first thing that comes to their mind mm-hmm. and get away with it. Women are told that whatever we say is wrong, however we say it is wrong. If we're nice and conciliatory, like Dr. Ford was, who she could not have been nicer in those hearings, you know, that's bad. If she were aloof, that then, you know, obviously nothing happened to her. She's too aloof. If she was aggressive, she would be a bitch. And Kavanaugh gets to turn bright red and basically like disrespect the senators in the room. And he's considered to be an emotional rock for his family. And that's the other thing. This whole hearing simultaneously, you know, vilified women and also used them as props. Kavanaugh kept bringing up the women in his life, all of his friends from high school.
And he's like a coach. And I'm like, stop talking about how you coach like high school girls. It's really creepy.
Creeping me out. But he kept using them as props, as this like this specter of what a good man I am. Look at all these women who say I'm such a good man. You should listen to them. Their opinion matters. But don't listen to this woman's opinion. Her opinion doesn't matter because she's, and I'm saying this word intentionally, crazy. She is not worthy of listening to. But these women that I've deemed acceptable, that I've included in my version of this patriarchy, you can listen to them. They know what's up. But these other women whom, for whatever reason, I've deemed to sit outside of the patriarchy, don't listen to them. And that was the second article that I read. It was called Christine Blasey Ford is a Class Traitor. And the argument was basically that Dr. Ford is a rich, upwardly mobile white woman who went to the fancy private all-girls private school that was the counterpart or one of the counterparts to Kavanaugh's fancy all-boys private school. You know, she grew up wealthy. She is currently wealthy. She's got literally an absurd number of degrees. When she was giving her credentials, I was like, girl, you went to a lot of school. I think that's why Brett Kavanaugh is so vehemently against her, is because she is supposed to hold up the patriarchy because it benefits her. It's like Ivanka Trump. Ivanka Trump works because she's willing to hold up the patriarchy because it benefits her. The other women, Deborah Ramirez and Julie Swetnick, they are not like Dr. Ford in that way. You know, Debbie Ramirez is half Puerto Rican and she worked her way through Yale, and Swetnick was, you know, went to a public school. And one of the arguments was, oh, Kavanaugh never would have associated with a public school girl. So there's also this sort of this line drawn between them. And so I think that's why Ford's allegations are making Kavanaugh so angry. And why he's confronting them so violently. Because, again, he feels entitled to this Supreme Court seat. He feels entitled to rich white women's high esteem. Because he keeps bringing it up. His wife, his daughters, all of his friends from high school. Like, he feels entitled to that esteem as well. And the fact that she's not giving it to him makes him angry. And I'm going to go back to this that I said at the top of the show. It's obvious that he's capable of this because he fucking lost it. And again, we're not even in a criminal trial here. This is not a matter of if this happened or what the punishment should be. The statute of limitations has long lapsed. This is a job interview. And all he told us today is that he is incapable of doing the job he has been put up for. And the fact that we can't see that, or that our senators can't see that, says almost less about Kavanaugh and more about the integrity of people like Graham and Hatch and Grassley. And it really holds a mirror up to our own dysfunction and our own reliance on this patriarchal system.
It really was an exercise in how detached in terms of like empathy and like lacking in self-awareness the Republican senators on the committee were. Because literally after the testimony, Hatch was like, I don't think she's uncredible. I think she's an attractive, good witness. And everyone's like, what the fuck do you mean by attractive, Hatch? And apparently he means like pleasing and like
That's not better.
It's not better. And apparently he uses it to describe personalities, but I still don't understand, right? And so that's what was really like another level of fucked up in this, is that like, if you think about it, if Ford was any other race, if she was any other class, actually, there is no way that she would be believed. There's no way that she would have had a hearing, right? There's no way that she would have been treated with the modicum of respect she was treated with by the Republicans. And it wasn't even a lot of respect, right? And I think that was like another – there were just layers of like bullshit about today. It was just so crappy. And I think what was like really, really like – depressing about it was that the Republicans were just able to so quickly say and just spin it into saying, yeah, she's not uncredible, but it doesn't really matter because Judge Kavanaugh has been good for the other 35 years of his life or whatever, and so he can be on the court. And this doesn't have a bearing on it. And that's somehow even more heartbreaking than saying we don't believe her. Yeah, because at least if they didn't believe her, you could be like, okay, they're choosing not to believe her to confirm the guy. But now they're saying, no, because we know it looks bad to suburban white women who went to college, if we trash this woman and say we don't believe her, we're going to pretend to say we believe her. Or actually we're going to believe her. But then we're also going to say it doesn't actually matter. So they're literally enacting a policy. Like, this is actually, you know, obviously, like when you pass legislation, there's a certain way you pass legislation. But this is now going to be like a de facto rule that it doesn't really matter what women's stories are, if you believe them or don't believe them. It doesn't disqualify you from getting a job if you've harassed someone. Because obviously, like, Donald Trump is the test case for this. He harassed like 19 plus women and he got fucking elected. But this system is literally saying we are going to like double down on that. And instead of choosing another equally conservative, even more conservative judge who we could ram through tomorrow, we're going to choose this guy. Literally just to fuck over every woman who has ever been harassed or has ever experienced the type of harassment that Dr. Ford has experienced.
Well, because I feel like at this point, choosing to stick with him, when, like you said, at this point, they could nominate like a stinky sock in judicial robes, and it would probably get passed because at least it's not fucking Kavanaugh. But the fact that they're sticking with him actually says a lot more to this sort of authoritarian point.
Yeah.
I feel like at this point they're like, we're going to do it because we fucking can. And we will not be, you know, we will not be bound to the pain of women. It doesn't fucking matter. And that's what they're saying.
Yeah, it's been over, I think it's been almost 2 weeks since the allegations have come out, right? And so they could have withdrawn his name at any fucking point, and they could have gone through, because Amy Coney Barrett is more conservative than Kavanaugh. Hardiman, almost as conservative as Kavanaugh, actually probably more so. Kethledge, all the other people on the shortlist actually are more conservative than Kavanaugh, technically, just based on their like judicial history. And they could have had that hearing in a week and voted the next week. They could have another judge by now if they had just pulled Kavanaugh on day fucking one. But they wouldn't, because at this point it's like, we're going to...
They're proving a fucking point. Yeah, they're proving a point now.
They're proving a point, but they're also just saying like, we don't care what our female constituents think. We don't care what any of our constituents think. We don't care how this looks. We don't care about anything. We literally don't care about anything. And that's, I think that's why, that's what's so troubling about this confirmation fight, is not just that Kavanaugh is really conservative and is going to fuck over Roe v. Wade. It's not just that he's a sexual harasser, which he is. It's also that the Republicans are enshrining a system by which it is okay to nominate a partisan hack to the fucking Supreme Court of the United States in the most partisan way possible, instead of just nominating someone who's equally hackish, but at least getting like fucking 60 votes on the guy. Because you could get assholes like Manchin and, you know, Doug, like you could get Heitkamp, Manchin, Doug Jones, and I'm saying they're assholes in the sense that, like, they vote the Republicans a lot of the time. But you would get those people to vote for another justice. And they probably might still vote for Kavanaugh. But, like, they're not doing it just because they can. They're going to go through with Kavanaugh just because they fucking can. And if that isn't a metaphor for sexual assault, I don't know what is. Like, this...
Oh, I was just going to say. I mean, that's exactly what it,
like,
is.
Everything is a metaphor. And that's even, like, so, like... You know, a lot of people in my life are just like, Varsha, why can't you, like, not talk about politics, like, for just 5 minutes out of the day? Like, whenever, like, somehow I turn every conversation into something about politics. Like, I think I have so for, like, the past, like, 6 or 7 years of my life. Every conversation has somehow turned into something about politics. And I was like, because I can't, because everything affects me. Like, a lot of different types of policy affect me, and I empathize with a lot of different things. That's why I talk about politics a lot, because I can see how it affects me, how it affects my community, how it affects my family, and I can understand that, right? And so I see everything as a fucking metaphor in 2018, and I can't not, like, talk about this or think about this, right? I can't not empathize with it. And so I feel like anybody who watched 20 seconds of this fucking interview anybody who watched 20 seconds of this hearing and didn't immediately empathize with Ford, or didn't immediately at least think, oh, she could be telling the truth, and oh, it didn't immediately realize, oh, they could just confirm somebody else, you're more dead to me. You're more dead inside than I could ever explain. Like, you're also dead to me, but you're also dead inside.
So the last thing I want to talk about quickly is the fact that some of the Republican senators, when talking to Kavanaugh, a big point of contention here was that Kavanaugh would not say that he would want to reopen the FBI background investigation. And some of the Republican senators were quoting Joe Biden, of all people, quoting what he said from the Anita Hill hearings 27 years ago. And I don't even necessarily need to talk about what the quote was. It was about the fact that the FBI does not draw conclusions. It only interviews, it only collects information, and then gives it to other people to draw the conclusions. But I would just like to point out that Anita Hill was treated so badly that even with Democrats in control of the Senate, and Joe Biden was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Republicans are now using his words because he was such a fuck up in the Anita Hill hearings.
Yeah, and I get that he's apologized.
No, he hasn't. He hasn't. He said,
I would do things differently, right?
I would do things differently is what he said. He has not apologized to her. Not once, not ever. And so he managed to fuck that up so badly that Republican senators 27 goddamn years later are quoting him in another sexual abuse hearing for another SCOTUS nominee. Like, I'm sorry, irony is dead, cremated, and scattered across the United States of America, because you've got to be fucking kidding me. That in 27 years, not only have we not learned anything, because 27 years ago, it was Democrats who were fucking over this woman, who was telling them to their faces that this man was not fit to serve in that seat. And this is obviously so complicated by race. Clarence Thomas was black. Anita Hill, they're black. And that complicates it even further. But at the core here, we have learned nothing in 27 years. And if anything, this is backsliding, because we haven't gotten better. We've looped all the way around to Orrin fucking Hatch quoting Joe Biden from 27 years ago.
I mean, I agree that, like, I agree with you that I don't think the Senate or like the people in power, the men in power, and even and sometimes the women, right? Because there have been like female surrogates defending Kavanaugh on TV. There have been women defending Kavanaugh on TV and in the press and all this stuff. Like fucking Barry Weiss is out here being like, oh, but does it disqualify him from the court? Yeah, it fucking does, Barry. Shut up. Stop trying to be one of those cool kids or those cool women who gets to hang out with the boys. Like that's not how you like, you know, that's like, it's... I think people in power haven't learned a lot because this is sort of like everyone since the day that like, you know, Me Too, I'm putting it in air quotes, has started, even though I think it started, you know, years before that. The day Me Too started, people have been talking about when is the backlash going to come? You know, when is our Thermidor? Thermidor is a French Revolution reference. Like, when is the Thermidor going to happen, right? And I think the fact that the people in power in the Senate Judiciary Committee, in the media, whatever, have been like trying to push back against the fact that, you know, Kavanaugh is disqualified from being on the court because of this, that is the pushback. That is proof that we haven't learned a lot. But I think the women of this country, they've learned a lot. Right. Not only do you have 1992, the year of the woman, after these Anita Hill hearings where you get so many more women running for office, you have after 2016 when you have Trump, an accused sexual abuser over a dozen times accused, him winning has led so many women to run. Hillary Clinton losing and being treated like shit by the media and by this country for decades has caused so many women to run. If Kavanaugh is confirmed tomorrow or the next week or whatever, there is going to be a rage you have never heard of before. It is going to be like, it is going to light this country on fire. And I'm not saying that just because like I feel like that is politically expedient for me to say. It's gonna fucking happen.
I've been spending the bulk of my time recently interviewing women running for office in the 2018 midterms, and let me tell you, they are not here to play. Nope. They are not here to fuck around. And people have called it the pink wave, the blue wave, the year of the woman, whatever. Varsha, they are going to burn it down.
Burn it to the ground, like scatter the ashes, salt the fucking earth of the patriarchy. The fact that you have like Senator Graham saying this is the most disgraceful moment in Senate history, I'm literally like, I'm seething. I was seething. Like, I couldn't watch it live, but I was seething just reading the tweets, and I was seething while watching it, right? Because you can hear Dr. Ford, like, her voice wavering throughout. You can hear how, like, unnerved she is having to sit in front of all of these cameras, in front of all of these people, and share the most intimate details about her life. And it was horrific to watch. And I can tell you with 100% confidence that any woman that watched it had a similar experience, that they had like this seething feeling. They had this gut-wrenching feeling. They were probably incredibly sad. They're probably also incredibly angry. And that only doubled when they were watching fucking Kavanaugh testify. So that's what I want Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and fucking Jeff Flake and Bob Corker and all these senators who like say they're anti-Trump or not even anti-Trump, say they're like, you know, adults in the room conservatives or like really moderate conservatives or whatever. That's what I want them to think about like what every woman in their life who watched this hearing was going through, what they were thinking of before they cast their vote. Because if they don't, they are going to make one of the biggest mistakes in their life, not politically. I mean, not just politically, but also as a fucking human being, right? Because I think it came out today that Corker is going to like vote yes on Kavanaugh. Fuck that. We can still try to change his mind. If you're in Tennessee, call him. But like the way that like senators, male and female, Democrat and Republican, are going to try to reason with this, if they're not thinking about the women in their lives first, if they're not thinking about the female constituents they have first, they're not doing this right. If they're not thinking about like their sons and what they would want if their son had committed this, they're not thinking about this right.
It was infuriating. And I mean, the thought that sexual abuse allegations would somehow move Republicans to disqualify Kavanaugh was naive. Look at who won the presidency. That was never going to happen. But like you said, Varsha, we're angry, and we're not angry in a soft and and quiet way anymore. We're done. And I think that there's nothing gained from losing hope. And I think that if we stick on this, even if Kavanaugh gets confirmed, even if the worst case scenario happens, I know these women running for office, not just at a federal level, but at local levels, in their communities, women volunteering, women running indivisible groups, women holding town halls and handing out flyers and information, and women creating content and pushing back.
It's going to have an outsized effect, and people don't realize it yet.
Exactly.
And they like to, you know, they like to compare it to, oh, this is now the Tea Party of the left, or this is X, or this is Z. And I'm just like, no, you're missing the story. You're missing the story of female rage. And I feel like if you attribute that rage just to Kavanaugh or just to Trump or just to like the GOP, like taking away healthcare or something, you're missing all of it. You have to look at...
You're missing the fucking point.
You can't attribute the rage to one single cause, because then you miss where the rage is coming from. The rage is coming from like an institutional frustration with the fact that the patriarchy has been fucking us for decades, and there was just like a breaking point, right? There have been multiple breaking points over the past couple years, and like Trump being elected, sure, is one of them, but I think another one of them is like the way Hillary Clinton was treated. I think another one of them is the way that ACA repeal was tried to like ram through. I think another one of them is the way that Ford has had to deal with, you know, death threats, and the way that she had to deal with this hearing, right? There are breaking points that are just making women more and more angry. But this rage has been simmering for decades, right? I think as like a budding historian can argue that like female rage has been like simmering and has broken through at multiple points throughout U.S. history since like the fucking beginning of our country, since the beginning of time. Female rage is like very important to talk about. And I think if you attribute female rage just to Trump this year, you're missing the point. I feel like it's more than just I'm angry at Trump. It's about I am angry at every single little bit of society that fucks me over. I'm angry at the fact that I don't get paid the same for the same amount of work as a man in certain situations. I'm angry that I don't have fucking like maternity leave. I'm angry that I don't have proper healthcare. I'm angry that my kids don't have proper schooling. You're angry about so many different things. It's not just you're angry about Donald Trump.
Exactly. And that's what I've learned speaking to all these women. It's like, they're like, yeah, Donald Trump sucks. He sucks. But that's not why I'm running. And honestly, that the reason I'm even bringing it up is because Kavanaugh is not the reason why women are angry. He is a symptom. Just quoting Joe Biden 27 years later, that's the fucking problem. That's the problem. Kavanaugh is a symptom. He's a pox of a symptom, but he's a symptom. Women are, we're going to fucking burn it down. Okay, Varsha, so obviously our action item is going to be related to Kavanaugh this week. So what can people do?
So first thing you can do is, if you live in Alaska, take out your cell phone, hit pause on this podcast, and call Lisa Murkowski. Her number is 202-224-6665. So that's, again, 202-224-6665. Call her, tell her to vote no on Kavanaugh.
Right. And if you live in Arizona, you can call Jeff Flake and tell him, A, to shut the fuck up, but then also to vote no on Kavanaugh. And his number is 202-224-4521. That's 202-224-4521.
And finally, your pro-choice resistance hero of the week, you can call Senator Collins if you live in Maine and tell her, one, that you voted to her, you contributed to her potential opponent in 2020 if she votes for Kavanaugh, and two, she should fucking vote no on Kavanaugh. And her number is 202-224-2523. Again, tell Queen Princess of like the fucking like pro-choice movement, like, you can call her whatever you want. You can call her like a betrayer of the pro-choice movement. You can call her the leader of the pro-choice movement. I don't care what you think about Susan Collins, but she says she's pro-choice. She says she supports Roe v. Wade. So tell her to vote fucking no on Kavanaugh by calling 202-224-2523.
So, Varsha, that was a very, I feel like I needed to talk about this.
This whole week was so like, cathartic. Yeah, this whole week was very cathartic because I'm still dealing with a couple of white men in my life who are just like, I don't know. And I'm like, what are you saying?
What do you mean you don't know? Get the fuck out of my sight forever. Goodbye.
And so talking about it was really helpful. Also, just yelling about female rage was really helpful.
I mean, it is. But yeah, so Hellions, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for coming with us on this slightly different format. We will be back to our regularly scheduled shows next week. In the meantime, have an amazing weekend. Raise some hell, burn the patriarchy to the ground.